welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Just a quick update before we get back to Steve and Tom on Greenovative. Don't forget, folks, Greenovative has a fantastic deal for Hagman and Hagman listeners. Their new GMAG Complete Pack, and complete with the Barter Pack, are a big hit with our audience. And they're running a 15% store-wide discount from now until the 1st of May at midnight. To get the discount, enter the code HAGMAN for 15% off. You will be glad you did. That's greenovative.com. Turning it back over, we have Tom Horn and Steve Quayle. Steve, just before the break, you were getting into to making a point. I'm going to turn it back over to you and let you continue.
Well, what I'm trying to get people to see by the grace of God, and only He can open eyes and stuff, is that we are in a time where things are going to be released. Now, Tom, I'm sending you something. Are you on your computer? I'm going to read it for everyone, but are you on your computer?
I'm not.
Okay. Let me give you something that will blow your mind. This is from a friend of mine who was a FEMA, I guess you'd call it, commander. She's one of the most brilliant women with no flattery I've ever met. She's one of the best connected women I've ever met. And she basically knows what's going on. Now, I'm going to read this. I just got this. It came in at 5:58, okay? Opened up my email. It's germane to what I'm going to say next. I received an email today that has some links you may be interested in. This is also an alert of sorts. The Smithsonian has teamed up with FEMA under the guise of preservation of family and cultural treasures and photos lost to natural disasters as an effort to secure these treasures and give people hope. I'll just give you my quick interpretation of that, to make sure nothing we don't want gets out. The predators are gathering and circling over the American prey in preparation for a natural disaster event that, as has happened in other countries. Other agencies and NGOs are also participating. To put up a bear fence here requires an archaeologist to evaluate the property for artifacts. I hope, Doug, as an investigator, I'm sending this to you and Tom, okay, and I'm going to post this with all the links. But what's astonishing to me is then she says, and I think obviously this is, she says, of course you can apply it to giants. Tom Horn and I on this date, what is it, April 27th, 2017, are on the Hagman and Hagman show talking about the great Smithsonian cover-up. We're getting an email, I'm getting it, which I'm going to share with Tom, and just for verification, validation, Doug, that's talking about a new teaming up of the Smithsonian with FEMA under the guise of preservation of family and cultural treasures and photos lost to natural disasters, an effort to secure these treasures and give people hope. What's your first response to that, Tom?
This is the doctrine of John Wesley Powell all over again. I mean, all the way through the 1800s, these exploration teams that were commissioned by the Smithsonian went into the Grand Canyons. Mahudi told us that while he was serving as the representative of the U.S. government for tribal affairs, that the U.S. government sent a team up above the Grand Canyon. Remember, in fact, maybe I shouldn't give this away. It might be in your documentary film.
No, you can give it away. I want people to understand.
He gives the facts and data on how they went up above the Grand Canyon, dug this gigantic shaft going down through the side of the Grand Canyon to the bottom, down below the bottom, where behind this waterfall there was the Stargate. And he gives vivid detail about exactly what happened. But this was all covered up by the U.S. government. They talked about up there drilling for some kind of an ore experiment or some other thing, and he said it was absolutely baloney. What they were doing is they were trying to figure out what was going on with what the Native Americans down inside that canyon were using as a doorway, as a portal. Well, Wesley Powell, I mean, it's called the Powell Doctrine, but the whole point about him was he was exceptionally bent toward rationalizing away any evidence that would challenge the evolutionary theory, which the bones of giants absolutely did. And so even some of the American Indian academics have written, and these are guys with PhDs too, who publish books that teach on the reservation schools, that have said that there is no doubt whatsoever that there really honestly is a large Indiana Jones-like building into which the great Smithsonian spirited away the bones of extraordinary humans. And some of these were up to 20, 30 feet tall, according to the tribal leaders that we talked to. But I'm currently running a series right now on SkyWatchTV.com in which I'm talking about the doctrine of Wesley Powell. And what you're basically what you're saying right now, Steve, sounds like a continuation of this same idea. You have to control the flow of information if you're a naturalist, if you're a Darwinian, if you don't want anything to challenge. Or in some cases, it's not really that you're all that concerned about something challenging Darwinian evolution as much as you don't want people to see evidence that the story of the Bible, that the Old Testament, is a true narrative of events that historically actually happened. That's really what they're more afraid of, is that people will understand that the Bible is true, and therefore the story of the Old Testament and the coming of Jesus Christ and all of those experiences are real. And they don't want people to be faced with this need to make a decision towards God and Christ.
And I think that what's critical is right now, you know, I remember starting on talk radio 25, 27 years ago, whatever it was, and there are people that know the exact date, quite candidly. You know, I guess it's important, a quarter of a century, let's say. But I can tell you this, that God has been so faithful, Tom, and I want to put everybody in remembrance. One guy said, why do you always brag about what you knew about in advance? I don't brag about it. I give God the glory because I say, and I want everyone to hear this from me, a man has nothing except he receive it from above. And that's when the Lord spoke to me, and those of you who were with me in KHNC, Johnstown, Colorado, Randy and a bunch of you will probably remember this, I said that the Lord has spoken to my heart that when cannibalism fills the headlines of the major news media, that the Great Tribulation has started. Now, people argue with that. They say, we're not in the tribulation, you know, blah, blah, blah. I won't argue that. But I could not have known that when I said it. And now, why this is critical is the appetite of demons expressed through humans, and the demons are a disembodied, if you will, the evil spirits that proceed out of the giants. I want to read Numbers 13, 31 through 33. If those people that say, and I call them crybaby whiners, okay, this isn't important, it's really important. You can't fight the war that is against you if you do not understand the nature of your enemy, his tactics, and how to defeat him. Now, Numbers 13, 31, 33, King James. But the men that went up with him, going with Joshua and Caleb, said, we be not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search, it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. That word, you know, eateth up, I mean, people say, well, that's just a metaphor for, you know, people that were too weak militarily. Uh-uh. You go look it up, and devour means to eat, literally, to cannibalize, to ingest, digest. And so what I think is astonishing tonight, and boy, I just see this as God's fingerprint. Again, thank you, Celeste, is the fact that somebody's incredibly worried about all the natural disasters happening, and under the guise of, quote, protecting the Native Americans, let me tell you something that we were told by them. Only 6% of Native American lands, especially sacred places, will they allow them to go to. 6%. So the question is, what's the other 94%? You know, Tom and I both have we refer to it, the Native American Sacred Sites in the Department of Defense. You can go search for that online. Native American Sacred Sites and the Department of Defense. what Tim Alberino found in Sardinia, in Malta, we found it in Rome, we found it in Cusco, we found it in Bolivia, at Tiwanaku, we find it every place we go. It's not what you see on top of the ground that's critical, it's what's underneath. Same thing with the Giza Plateau. Some of those famous hydrologists and geologists have stated that the Great Pyramid of Giza and the Sphinx have had multiple floods. Well, I got news for you. You know, you can say, well, it was just a single flood. The evidence would, what we say, argue against that. So what is, I think, so critical is to try and Tom, am I getting this across? Because if you can say it better, please do. The complete control that the powers that be, the shadow government, the darkness, the, if you will, the Illuminati, the global Satanists, they don't want the truth out. Because as long as they can divorce the false paradigm that they're going to present to the world, then people will not come to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. In essence, ladies and gentlemen, I'll make it easy for you. We're not doing this just to present cool stuff, which it truly is. We're doing this at the command and direction of the living God to warn you and to let you know what's coming. For the scripture says, surely the Lord God will do nothing except he reveals his secrets to his servants, the prophets. Daniel talked about it. Sir Isaac Newton talked about that in the end time, a group of men would be raised up amongst much clamor and criticism that God would be revealing his secrets to. So go to this, Native American Sacred Sites in the Department of Defense. You'll find out. I found out last week. Maybe I'll just share this, and I won't go into great detail. I'll turn it right back to you. I went to a couple places, you know, from everywhere, from Chaco Canyon in the air, all the way to the Grand Canyon. I went through some of the most strange landscape that, quite candidly, Tom, I never knew existed. I was basically following my hunch. Now, I don't know if people know this. This is very cool. But in a helicopter, you can get what's called a five gimbal, a five-axis gimbal that you can put some of the sharpest camera lenses and cameras, movie cameras, in it, and you can remain totally stable at 120 knots. That's about 135 miles an hour. We traveled 1,000 miles in 9.5 hours. The only thing we did was stop to take a potty break and to fill up with gas. We had to, for those of you helicopter pilots, could only run about 65% fuel because of the weight of the camera. It was so telling and compelling. If I told you, Tom, and I think I already gave you, I won't give it away yet until people in Branson are going to have the mind-blowingest experience right. of seeing some of this stuff. And I want to share something, ladies and gentlemen. This isn't a bait or a hook, but what we're going to do, because we've got some of the state-of-the-art, and I can guarantee you this, if there's, you know, however many people will show up, at least probably 5% will be intelligence agencies from all over the world. Mm. And, you know, and so this is critical stuff. And again, when you enable Doug Hagman, and I want to make this clear, Tom, you weren't asked, I wasn't asked, but those of you around the world, would you please just even think of sending $5? Because, you know, Doug and Joe and the team there, John and everybody that's associated with it, you know, there are people out there with big bucks. And I know there are times, and I you know, I'm sensitive because when I've watched it happen, that, you know, you don't realize what puts it on. And I want to ask you, everyone who's listening to this program tonight, if you were not able to have Hagman and Hagman and Tom Horn, myself, and all the great guests they have on, where would you go to get the information? Where would you go? And unfortunately, Tom, we know this to be human nature. People always will say in retrospect, I wish I would have helped him. I should have helped him. I could have helped him. And for those of you that have helped us, Cam and Jan and others, Gary H., you know, Gary Haven, David, all of you that have helped us, every single person that's given $100, and I'm not begging for money, I'm just telling you this, is that we have the odds stacked against us. When Tim and the team were in Sardinia, the papal helicopter was in the air. The little guys in their cars, the spies on their phones, were, you know, we kept them busy. But what's associated with all this stuff is the fact that, ladies and gentlemen, one of the richest, wealthiest directors in Hollywood, James Cameron of Titanic fame, Good Night, Avatar, all the different stuff he's done, Terminator, movies that are blockbusters, he's spending huge dollars to find Atlantis. Guess what? They even went to Sardinia, but they didn't see what was in front of them. Now, fast forward. How is it that the navigators in Sardinia, who claim to be the descendants of giants, that their structures show up in America? Their towers show up in America. Right. The same religious practices. So, boy, I'm telling you what, I'm ready to launch on this. This is the most tremendous, what would you say, Tom? Mind opening. God has his hand on it, and I'm excited that, we get to be part of it. But not only that you all get to be included in it. Everybody's got questions. Look, we don't have all the answers, but we're not sitting out there copying people on YouTube or, doing that. We're out doing the original stuff. So please, ladies and gentlemen, continue to pray for us. And if any of you are able to help us in a big way, look, I know a lot of people, and so does Tom, and we know a lot of people all over the world. But if I could tell you that you can have what you've been looking for in answers, I think it would be provocative. And that's the same reason why Tom brought up Doug Hagman and I bring him up. Because listen, ladies and gentlemen, if Doug and I told you what's going on behind the scenes against us, you wouldn't believe it. And we won't even give time to that. Number one, we can't, because we're told we can't. But the point that I think is critical is that there is no place on planet Earth, in my opinion, that God has chosen at this time to present this information. Doug's not perfect, I'm not perfect, and Tom is probably one of the most articulate men. I wish I could be as coherent as you, Tom. I think everybody wishes that, but am I communicating with the people at how important this is?
Yeah, absolutely, and I would like to ask a very practical question. If somebody wanted to make a donation to Hagman & Hagman, how do they do that? Is there a PayPal button? Is there something on one of the websites, Doug?
Yes, there is. And thank you, Tom and Steve, for being so generous and urging people to do this. It's so much appreciated, but there is a PayPal button on HagmanReport.com or HagmanandHagman.com, and then we have our P.O. box, our mailing address there as well.
And, thank you both, because I have to say this. It does take money. We pay salaries here. We're supporting five families, and thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, I know that people get accustomed to listening to the program. They don't ever really stop and think about what it takes. And I also, because I own a company, and in the past we used to do advertising, and you make very, very little money actually comes in as a result of advertising other people's products. But you guys have worked hard, you've done it with very little, so I'm hoping that, and you know what, even what Steve said a moment ago, if somebody's listening to this program and they're thinking, well, I don't have a whole lot of money, I probably couldn't give more than $10. But if enough people did that, it would matter, and some people can give more. So I really hope that people will respond to that, go to your websites, find the PayPal button, or if they can send a check to your mailing address. And folks, you need to know that the Hagmans never ask us anything about this. It totally is just me and Steve bringing this up, because we appreciate so much what they've done to help us get the word out on our research. And any time, every time, we've had a breakthrough moment, the Hagmans have been forefront and center, and they're brave. They're willing to let us talk about stuff that other people run away scared from. So
yeah, with their tails between their legs going meow.
Yeah, that's right. Now I want to, Steve, let me jump back for just a second. You mentioned,
sure, take all the time you want, Tom. Finish your thoughts.
You mentioned that Department of Defense article. You actually quote that in the first half of the book, and people should know this book is broken into two parts. The whole first half is written by you, the second half is written by me. But you quote that Department of Defense, you give the link back to the Department of Defense where the article can be found, and I read part of that and was absolutely blown away, because they are actually studying from a scientific point of view ancient Stargate technology that is connected to the American Indian tribes and how that technology is used to open doorways into parallel realities. It was unbelievable. I had to verify it for myself. I thought, really? This can't possibly be real. But it is. And we even had Allie Anderson, one of my research analysts. She got a hold of the Department of Defense and the people that authored that article and got permission for you to quote a lengthy portion of that and then to put the references in the books. So I wanted to point that out, that you had briefly mentioned it, but people may not realize that this DOD report actually talks about American Indian artifacts, including Stargate technology and the way it is used to make contact with other realities. Now, the other thing you were talking about a moment ago that I want to get on is ritual cannibalism and the role that plays, because at first, when you think about ritual cannibalism, you don't really understand the depth to the extent to what this, how this was important to the ancient societies, starting all the way back with the Watchers, but including the American Indian tribes and the Mesoamerican tribes, and what it was used for. When we were in the Four Corners here about whatever it was, 5-6 months ago, and we had that great big round table 1 week long. Basically, you rented out the whole hotel, and we had it at our beck and call for the most part. And we sat with those tribal elders. They pointed out to us the mountain range where the giant bones are. And we're going back there when we get permission to get back on the res. They agreed unanimously that these bones are going to be reanimated at a soon specific time. I think this stuff is covered in the documentary film, is partly covered in the book. But they also began describing something that until then I was really unfamiliar with. You may have known about it, Steve. I didn't. Serious association with cannibalism. The Raphaim, and even Og, who you were talking about a moment ago, of Bashan. First, there's always been this question about how do the giants that are destroyed in the flood, now they're in the underworld realm of the dead, the Raphaim, the spirits of the dead giants, how can they be revived? How do they return? If the Native Americans today are talking about these bones being reanimated, the giants returning, but also, how did the giants return after the flood that's talked about in the Bible? How did they reappear on earth again, which they did? And there's several fascinating theories involving that question, some of which we've discussed before, others we could discuss later tonight if we have time. But it was during this two-year, really altogether, Cloud Eater investigation, and more recently towards the end of 2016, that we unearthed this critical ancient belief involving cannibalism and what was believed in the Middle East at the dawn of time, including what was believed by the Maya, what was believed by Aztec, and apparently the Anasazi, and this bizarre idea that through cannibalism their DNA would be modified. Basically, their genetic makeup would be reconstructed through ritual cannibalism, not cannibalism because you're starving to death and therefore, you know, you're stuck up on the top of a mountain in an ice storm and somebody eats, you know, part of the leg of a human or not. No, not that. Ritual cannibalism was used intentionally to modify their genetic makeup to do what we would call out of the Hebrew Bible cause them to become a fit extension for incarnation by the spirits of dead giants, and so on. So now this requires a little bit of unpacking, so I won't take very long, but give me a couple of minutes, and I'll try to keep it simple and shorter than all the research that we include in the new Cloud Eaters book and the companion documentary film. But so where did this idea begin with, that through ritual cannibalism a body's genetic makeup could be modified to become a fit extension for incarnation by fallen angels? Where did that begin with? Well, it began with the Watchers. It began literally at the dawn of time. The idea that Raphaim could be resurrected into a body. Now, why do I say that? First of all, note how in the Bible, according to 2 Peter 2:4, Jude 1:6, and the apocryphal book of Enoch, which the Bible writers are quoting from, that the watchers were interested in leaving their fixed habitation in heaven and becoming incarnate on earth. And they saw human genetic material as the methodology for this advent, the creation of a hybrid body made of human. And earlier you said that this DNA that was discovered had human and animal DNA in it. Well, that also, according to some of the extra-biblical texts, like the book of Jasher, it discusses how they used both animals and humans. Of course, the book of Enoch says they also sinned against the animals, and the Old Testament also implies that. So there was also something going on there with animal genetic material. But in any case, they saw this blend of human, animal, angelic material as something that they could extend themselves into. And if we have time later and people want, I can get more into the details of how that ancient science technology actually worked. But the point is, it's indisputable, according to these ancient texts and scriptures, that entering our dimensional reality and exiting their heavenly estate is what the watchers wanted to do. And the result of that event was the birth of the giant clans, what some people commonly call the Nephilim, the Gibborim, the Anunnaki, and so on, that went on to become the scourge of the earth. Now, secondly, okay, so that event happened. Secondly, immediately after, the giants, the mutations are born from that unholy wedlock. These giants are filled with the vile appetite of the fallen watcher seed. You can read the ancient text, the Book of Watchers. You can read the Animal Apocalypse. You can read the Book of Jubilees. You can read the Book of Giants from the Qumran text. You can read Enoch, starting at chapter 7 and forward. All of them start describing this insatiable appetite of these giants, these offspring of the Watchers. And furthermore, they describe it as being key to understanding their crimes, which included murder, cannibalism, and the consumption of blood. By the way, there's an academic paper on this that is first class. It's titled Monstrous Appetite, Giants, Cannibalism, and Insatiable Eating in Enochic Literature. It was written by Professor Matthew Goff of Florida State University, and I can email that to anybody that might really want to take time to learn more about that. But what we learn through a careful reading of these ancient texts reveals that the appetites of the giants, now get this, the appetite of the dead giants, the Raphaim, in their underworld state, where they're down there now, and they can no longer eat persons, which in Enoch 7, I mean, their appetite is crazy. They eat everything. Animals, humans, they eventually even start eating each other. It's insatiable, right? Part of the judgment against them, though, is that now, in the underworld, they can no longer eat persons, and it drives them insane. And this is actually part of their judgment because they can no longer be satisfied, and it's that torture, the desire of these spirits that is manifest when they affect the minds of humans that will allow them to be influenced. When they possess, you know, this idea that the dead Nephilim, some of them became the demons that are on the world today, right? But they're also connected with the Raphaim in the underworld. They're all part of the same consort, but 10% of them, according to all these ancient texts, were allowed to remain on the earth, and according to some people's theology, these are the demons that infest the earth today. And so they tempt individuals. They affect the minds of individuals, and they compel those individuals, if possible, towards cannibalism. Why? In two reasons. In order that the demon spirit can satisfy their overwhelming original hunger to consume humans, and now through the individuals that they possess. And Steve, you're correct when you said that all of a sudden cannibalism is a big thing. Oh my gosh, there are so many movies There's so many things that are coming out right now on human cannibalism, articles that are being written about it, and they're being written in a way as if they're studying this in an appreciable way. I mean, almost as if there's some good that could be evaluated from human cannibalism. There was that journalist, I forget what his name was, but people can Google this and read about it, this journalist for one of the major news media outlets that recently went to another country and consumed part of a human brain or something with the cannibals that were there, and they're legitimizing all of this in mainstream journalism. I mean, it's sick, right? But anyway, so I don't get off the track here, that what the spiritual forces are doing, they're satisfying their own demonic hunger through individuals that practice cannibalism. But secondly, the person participating willingly in that process is thought by ancient standards to become genetically modified. That's to say, when in the beginning of their practicing cannibalism, and their conscience is telling them that this is an ultimate rejection of Yahweh, this is a sin against his creation, but they keep doing it anyway, day by day, they become less and less the imager of God, as Sharon Gilbert likes to say it. We were created in God's image to reflect his image, the imagers of God. They become less and less of that, and instead they become the imagers of the fallen ones. And during that time, the ancient belief was that the DNA of the host participant, the human, is slowly being rewritten, changed, modified into something other than what God created, which allows either the modern individual today or the ancient original mutant humans in the days of Noah to become a fit extension for incarnation by Raphaim. Now, here's the important question. Is that just a silly myth? An ancient belief that doesn't have any basis in scientific reality? Well, we now know, by the way, we now know what these ancient writers couldn't possibly have known, because they didn't have, as far as we know, the capacity to be able to study DNA like we do today. We now know, though, that idea is a scientific fact, that germline genetic modification occurs through cannibalism. And there's a famous example of this that emerged in just recent years. It could be Googled. There's articles just published last year and this year that can be read by anybody involving the Foray people of Papua New Guinea who, through cannibalizing the brains of their dead, developed an anti-kuru. Kuru is a neurodegenerative disorder. But they developed an anti-kuru gene that actually strengthened their genetic makeup and protects them against that disease, and it became germline and is passed on to all succeeding generations. And this is only one article. There's several others that provide examples. And by the way, if people want to Google that article and read it, I have it in front of me. It's called Gene Change in Cannibals Reveals Evolution in Action. But it verifies that this ancient idea is something that actually really does occur. Through cannibalism, the genetic makeup of the human is slowly rewritten until over time the person becomes something else. Now, in Indian lore, some of the information they learned from the giant dragon-worshipping interlopers, maybe we'll get into that later, that came down through Mesoamerica, Baja, these other giants came down, wiped out the Anasazi, some of the early American Indian tribes. But don't forget that some of their stories around this involve what they call the Wendigo, which means the evil spirit that devours mankind. This is the name that's associated with the word cannibal, actually. A lot of it is talked about up or close to Canada, but there are legends in the Navajo region here, the American Midwest, where, according to their ancient stories, these were evil creatures. Sometimes they were giants, sometimes as much as 15 feet in height. But at one time, they were human beings. This is the point about this. And what they say is that once a person turns to cannibalism, even under emergency or starvation circumstances, if they continue cannibalism, they become changed forever. Not just in their mind, not just in their heart, not just because they've rejected God, but their genetic makeup literally begins to become modified. the evil spirit takes hold of them, and they're permanently transformed into this evil being. So I would encourage people, you know, maybe Google the Wendigo, look at how flesh, blood, it's all a part of the elements that can transform humanity, a person, an individual, into a fit extension for incarnation by underworld entities. So I kind of got off track there a little bit, so let me get back on track. There's another connection to the mysticism of cannibalism and its connection to why the Watcher offspring participated in it, that's connected to human blood in academic circles as a life force from God. I've read several scholars, when they're talking about, you know, why were the offspring of the Watchers so cannibalistic and eaters of human flesh and drinkers of blood, why were they doing that? And some of these scholars point out how in the Bible eating blood is condemned in the Old Testament, and that among other things that might be because it's associated with the moment when God breathed life into mankind, the breath of life, and man became a living soul. In other words, that there could be something in human blood dating back to God, connected to God, that the Watchers and the Nephilim wanted to consume, to either somehow, what, steal divinity, or to profane God, or both. But there probably is something to this idea, that the reason that God condemned the eating of blood is because it originated with the Watchers, was practiced by the Nephilim, and had something to do with profaning the human body in order to modify the genetic makeup of mankind into something other than what God had created. But in either case, following the descent of the Watchers and the proliferation... Am I going on too much here?
No, no, no. Keep going. And it, because, again, when you need a break, I'm just telling you, I'm going to prove to people that this is even of web, I'm sorry, it's of web bot concern. And I would tell everyone should get Cliff High's halfpasthuman.com, the web bot report for May. But go ahead, Tom, because just finish your thought, because I'm going to take off right from what you say.
Okay, so I'll try to make it fast. But here's the point, that literally from the dawn of time, this idea proliferated across the world. Here in the it came here to the Americas. It was among the Aztec. It was among the Maya. But it was all throughout the Middle East. It was all a part of all of the Mesopotamian, the ancient ideas around the world. This cult ritual idea that by eating alive or by drinking the blood of a person and sometimes an animal, that you would somehow capture the essence or the soul of that victim. It's called omophagia in some academic circles. You can read about the earliest Norwegian huntsmen who believed in this idea. They would drink the blood of bears to capture their strength. East African Maasai warriors practicing that. They sought to gain the strength of the wild by drinking the blood of lions. Human victims, though, were the preferred victims in many cultures, especially here closer to home, Mesoamerica, the Maya, the Aztec, later the Anasazi, which we document in our book, and our tribal confidants at our private meeting with them said the same thing. Now, you know, the last program we were on, we were talking about the Podesta emails, spirit cooking. So you can also see this practice continues today in cults, Satanists, even secret societies. It illustrates that not only is it ancient, but it's modern. There's an ongoing effort on the part of Satan to convince as many as he can. And now, all of a sudden, Steve, your prophecy is coming to pass that cannibalism would be a part of the end times. Who would have ever thought this? I mean, 25 years ago when I was a pastor, I would have laughed in your face. I'd have said, what? No way, right? All of a sudden, it's a cultural meme. It's a phenomenon. It's having a shocking revival. And you can see how not only the ancient idea of becoming a fit extension, but it's also it's a demonization of the Eucharist, the Holy Communion. from the goal of Holy Communion in our different, you know, Christian-based churches, transubstantiation in the Catholic Eucharist or consubstantiation in the Lutheran Communion or a symbolic ordinance in the Protestant evangelical circles. All of these have a common goal of elevating the worshiper of Christ into sacramental communion with God. But the goal of the ritual of cannibalism, ancient and modern, is just the opposite, the tearing apart, the eating alive of the one cannibalized. Whole idea is to capture the essence of the Raphaim and to bring it into this incarnated rage with man. So let me bring up one other important point, Steve, and I'll turn it back over to you about this ancient belief, because this is something you brought up earlier. It might be connected to the point you're going to make. But the relationship between ritual cannibalism as a technology, as a methodology for incarnation by spirits of dead giants, this is connected to the Raphaim, who were the giant occupants of Canaan, but also Og, the king of Bashan, whose bed was 18 feet long, and the Watcher Sins. All of this is connected. Og and the Raphaim were associated by the ancients with the shades of the dead, including the dead Nephilim in Sheol Hades, and the potential for their resurrection. So I'll just give this to you very quickly. Og was the king of the Amorites, who ruled in the region of Bashan, where the gates of hell were believed to be. His bed's nine and a half, almost nine and a half cubits. But it's exactly, down to the millimeter, the exact same size of a cultic bed that was discovered in the ziggurat at Amenanke, which most archaeologists identify with the real Tower of Babel. And the large bed there was found in what was, and I can't say it in the Ugaritic language, but what it means is the house of the bed. And this was where the god Marduk and his wife Zarpanatu would meet annually. Guess for what reason? For ritual procreation. The whole idea of raising up from out of the underworld into incarnation these ancient underworld entities, and also blessings upon the land. So it was a fertility type rite. But I and others are very suspicious that this actually played a role in deity incarnation, not just as a parody, but an effort to raise dead Nephilim to whom Og was related. And then lastly, on the meaning of the word Raphaim, this is really germane because it carries with the word Raphaim carries with it the idea to heal or to be healed, as in a resurrection from the place of the dead. And in the ancient Ugaritic Rosh Shamra text, the Raphaim are described as these demigods that worship the Amorite god Baal, the ruler of the underworld. And when the Raphaim died, their spirits went into the underworld, where they joined Baal's acolyte assembly of lesser gods and kings and heroes and rulers. This is important. I'll tell you why in a moment. These beings had the power in Amorite theology to return from the dead through reincarnation into bodily form as Nephilim. And in fact, the Raphaim giants are specifically noted by Moses in the Old Testament as being the return of the antediluvian Nephilim, that the Raphaim were in fact the reincarnation of the demonic spirits of the Nephilim giants that had been destroyed in the flood. Now, it might be a surprise to many Bible students to learn that the prophet Isaiah seems to have considered this Amorite dogma factual. In other words, it was actually a true revelation from God that they stole and made part of their mythology. But he ties the power of these beings to the king of Babylon and Lucifer himself. So after prophesying against the leader of Babylon, here's what Isaiah says. In parallel to Raphaim theology in Isaiah 14, 9 through 10, he says, "Hell, that is Sheol Hades, from beneath, is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead," this is the Raphaim, "for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones," this is in the underworld, "it has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. And they shall speak and say unto thee, Art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us?" End quote. And then immediately following that statement, Isaiah looks beyond the Raphaim at who their Baal actually is And he identifies him in verse 12 saying, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning?" And so you can find throughout the Bible, Job 26:5, dead things that you quoted earlier, dead things are formed from under the waters, this idea that underneath the surface of the earth, that the earth is dynamic, and squirming beneath the surface of the earth are giants that went down into hell, according to the Old Testament, in full battle dress, awaiting the moment of their reanimation, the moment of their resurrection. So go, Steve.
Well, I think, too, in release, because the Native Americans told us that there was something holding it back, like my friend the pilot that flew the giant out of Bagram Air Force Base, and L.A. Marzulli and I did a show together that I think is so much of a watershed event. And for the record, everyone, L.A. put me in contact with one of the guys that was the shooter, and they were told specifically in their training to aim high, to shoot with a grenade launcher, a 40-millimeter grenade at the head, in essence to take the head of the giants off. And they didn't understand why they were being told that until the reports came back of what had to happen, because David cut off Goliath's head for a reason. It wasn't just to show his triumph, which God did give him the triumph over Goliath, but because of the energy, the life energy force, and this is where the myth of the green man, the legend of the green man comes into play, these things can literally reanimate, like a salamander losing its tail. That's why the head has to come off. And I want to just share this. All I've ever been told by the people that fight these things are three things. Number one, you've got to use solid copper, and then this is germane to what I'm going to share next. You've got to use solid copper, heavy caliber weapons. That doesn't mean copper plate. It doesn't mean copper, pellets and like number four buck or whatever, double odd buck. It means like things like elephant caliber guns. It means like M249 and the 308 machine guns with solid copper rounds. The solid copper poisons the bloodstream. And I asked every form of copper I could think of. People send me emails, can I do copper arrowheads? The Native Americans did, and they would have to fire hundreds of them. But at the end of the day, they had to take down and take off the head of the giants. And Tom, what's fascinating to me, they also told me, these are special operations guys that kill these things. You have to use smoke because the giants have to have their olfactory sense, which is very keen. You have to confuse it. And so, you know, that's about it that I know, and that's all I was ever told. Because, again, you know, I ask questions about heat, like flamethrowers. I ask questions about extreme cold. Nope, none of that stuff works. And so what's fascinating is the ancient copper mines in the Upper Peninsula, or Solomon's mine. Copper was more important than, quote, the Bronze Age. Copper was used in weaponry. Even in the desert southwest, we had a gentleman who sent me the photos, and now he's got a DVD out, and talking about the if you will, the giant king and queen who are clad in copper armor. And what's very critical to understand is that we're going to have to deal with this. Now, I want to read this from the web bots. Now, Tom, you and I were in the desert southwest, led there, led, L-E-D by, or L-E-A-D, whichever way you spell it, led there by the living God. And here's what Cliff High, I would tell everybody, the reports are inexpensive. Page 29 of a 38-page report. This is critical for you to understand. When you're dealing with the spirit realm, even words and all that's out there in cyberspace, you really think that you know, some of the smartest fallen angels in the history of their creation don't know how to type, you know, or don't know how to use the technology that they're behind? I'm going to say this. This is going to blow your mind, Tom. The pharaohic Egyptian meme, meaning the theme, is going to be very wide across humanity over this year. Now, listen to this. He goes on to say, in other sets, we have both Grand Canyon as well as separate indicators for Southwest North America, which discovery of ancient Egyptian artifacts, language, and that will their items will be appearing. Now, what's important is I just got another email. God bless you, my brother. He said this. He's a member of a SWAT team for the DHS. They're now being assigned to guard FEMA in their undertaking. He didn't know what it was about until we were talking tonight. If this isn't cool, I don't know how to explain cool. I mean that the hand of the Lord. Now listen, other sets or themes have military involved in excluding civilian populations from the fine. Note that this episode has more geographic references to the American Southwest than other areas. Now, these sets, Cliff High speaking, also describe a fight that will occur between locals and military over removal of artifacts. And they go out by basically officialdom is going to freak out after they learn that a number, like hundreds of thousands of the artifacts have gone missing. So they're talking, the central theme is this, that new discoveries underground, forbidden archaeology, and all of this ancient technology with diagrams of machinery and everything, it's coming out. And here's one of the most fascinating things. I made this statement, and I write about pyramids in this book, and not from a New Age or a cult, but basically there's going to be, you're going to love this, a reactivation of pyramids from around the world with, in essence, a visible force that's going to be seen. So it's like something's going to activate the pyramids. And in my understanding, you know this too, you teach it's the gate of the gods, that the stargate, that the capstone, and I can share this with you, that at one point, a number of years ago, is when the Epic of Gilgamesh, the tomb of Gilgamesh was found. Special forces had gone in ahead of time, but it was at the time that you received the Iraqi information from the museum before your house mysteriously, and you know me, I've never maintained otherwise, was intentionally set on fire. And ladies and gentlemen, there's a whole story, I think we talked about it. But the point being is, Tom, last week, the Stargate that you see on my website on the photo of the day, people say it just looks like a big indentation. Yeah, big as in 13 feet, was submitted by a photographer who knows what we're talking about. And he said he had the most unusual feeling. He said when he saw it, he instantly knew what it was. Now, why were you and I and Timothy Alberino, our film crews in the desert Southwest? Again, when Jesus, here's, I hope that people get this point. When Jesus said, "Get thee behind me, Satan," it literally means follow after me. It's like the parable of the seed that falls on the different ground. It's like the seed that grows up, some good, some weeds, but it's up to God to send the angels. I hope this is getting across to everyone. In other words, the major themes that are coming out, I better read this one email. I mean, this is chilling, and Doug, I'll send all this to you so you can you know the person that sent this to me, and he says this. This is active in DHS. Isn't it funny that DHS just made a specialized response team of elite military veterans who are DHS law enforcement officers who are now FEMA's direct security force during national security events, natural disasters that cause state of emergencies? That is directed by the president and secretary of DHS. And here you are speaking of these situations, and we are the protectors of said situations. And my brother that sent that to me, if you think of all, you know, your future in the months ahead, look at how God is preparing you to deal with this when you have to deal with it. So what we're seeing right now, and that was a not coded message, but a encouraging message to the person that sent that, the idea is simply this. Ladies and gentlemen, by unlocking the keys that Thomas Horn has been led to research, write about, by Timothy Alberino's, and I can tell you this, Tim did the most amazing job of writing the script, and things would flow in. He even said it to me today, and by the way, Tom, I think the trailer will be ready by next week. It's just got to be mastered on Monday. When people hear and see the images of what truly went on and put this into perspective, any of you want to challenge, go ahead. Go buy Half Past Human, the web bots. I think halfpasthuman.com, and you can just look up Cliff High Webbot, H-I-G-H. You'll be blown away. You will absolutely be blown away. So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, you've got to recognize that we're not on the cutting edge of history. We're on the proclamation of real history, and God's giving you a warning. And, Tom, you know the scripture. God says, surely, Lord, God will do nothing. I quoted earlier, but he also says his people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because, and here's the best news yet. You don't have to be afraid about this stuff. Jesus said, behold, I give you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. But this just is exciting to me to see. And by the way, I just got an email too. The Song of Hiawatha by Longfellow talks about how the giants ripped huge boulders from the mountains to hurl at each other, and said this is how there came to be so many boulders strewn around the mountains. And I can't pronounce your name, starts with an E, Arindia, but thank you for sending that. But it's always, whether you're dealing with the Toltecs, you have these huge boulders, you know, maybe they're just such big giants they decide they got bored with eating people and wanted to play marbles. Well, they happen to weigh tons. But the point being is this, that everything now is going to be revealed. And like I said earlier, they'll try and contain it. It's beyond the point of containing, because when God gives his decree from heaven, let the truth be known, doesn't matter who does what, doesn't matter who tries to cover it up, it will come forth. And I was literally in a place, I'm just going to whet the appetite of people. The people that come to Branson will see this, and I'm not going to show it anyplace else. I won't put it on my website. People will see an area that the Egyptian longboats actually sailed into this part of the Grand Canyon and the surrounding area thousands of years before the Anasazi were cannibalized. And we're talking about the same thing that Cliff Mahoody talked to us about in the drilling. And Tom, when that drilling took place, I was called after coast to coast and told that they carried the giants, the giant mummies, out, and they took them to Area 51. Anybody want to bet there was extractable DNA from those?
Yeah, and by the way, we're going to go to another break here, I think, any second, but I just want to say when we come back from the...
Yeah, guys, we're right up against the break. Sorry to jump in there. Folks, we're talking with Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com and Tom Horn, skywatchtv.com. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after these short messages. Stay with us.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.